The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Nietzsche, of course, announced famously in the late 1800s that God was dead, and the typical rationalist atheist regards that as a triumphalist proclamation. But that wasn't that for Nietzsche, and Nietzsche knew perfectly well and said immediately afterward that the consequences of that was going to be bloody catastrophe, because everything was going to fall. And he predicted the rise of communism, for example, and the deaths of tens of millions of people in the aftermath of the death of God. Because Nietzsche knew perfectly well that when you pull the cornerstone out from underneath a building, that even though it may stay aloft in midair like a cartoon character that's wandered off a cliff for some period of time, that it will inevitably crumble and that it will be replaced by something that's perhaps far worse.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that is Dr. Jordan Peterson, and an incredibly bright and eloquent man. I mean, he was talking about what happens when you start to remove God from the foundation of society. And I'll tell you what, look, you and I both know this, right? Not good. Not good. It's a hard lesson for some people to learn, unfortunately. Look, I want to share some poll numbers I found, some stats. I don't know where your kids are at the faith. Look, I sent my kids to Catholic school, right? We prayed the rosary as a family. My wife and I would gather, around in our formal living room. We'd light candles, and my daughter would run down with her little statue of the Blessed Mother. And, you know, Satan hated it because the phone would ring and the kids would fight. But yeah, it's always a good sign, right? And so we'd pray the family rosary together. And there's a power in that family rosary. So I'd take them to confession, you know, and they'd hop in the car. We'd say prayers before meals. We'd say prayers, you know, before bed. You know, they went to Mass with us. So I had five kids in like 6 years. I'd imagine five kids in 5 years. It's like there's nothing but screaming and fighting. We're in the baby room. We're in the bed. You know, it was an ordeal, right? But I'll tell you what. I've got kids that are on both ends of the spectrum. I'll be honest with you. I've got a daughter who is discerning religious life. I've got a son who I pray for every day because he's nowhere near where he needs to be, you know? And it's not like I didn't educate them. It's not like I didn't pray with them. It's not like I didn't give them the example. It's not like I, you know, didn't, you know, they don't know where I stand on these issues. And I have no doubt. Look, I believe the prayers of a parent are extraordinarily powerful. And I believe the one prayer God always hears and answers is that prayer of conversion. I believe those things fundamentally. But the culture is such an incredibly powerful place today, isn't it? I mean, it is. You can do everything, I think, right. And as a parent, I think we can always do more. But you're facing an adversary that's so large. It's a giant. And your kids are being indoctrinated from every possible venue. The numbers that come out are a little disturbing, I'll be honest with you. You might have kids that are away from the faith. You know, maybe they don't care. I mean, I always talk about the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S's, that have abandoned the faith. And it's not news that the younger generation are leaving the faith, right? And they're leaving it in huge numbers. That's not news. You know what's news to me? And this is why I want to share this with you. There was a recent survey. They put out some numbers on the lack of belief. It's not just leaving, but it's on the lack of belief in God. The survey was conducted by George Barna at Arizona Christian University. So it's questions are coming from a Protestant perspective. But nonetheless, this is part of what they found. This is according to the Christian Post. Check this out, right? Nearly half of all boomers, they believe when they die, they're going to go to heaven because they confess their sins and they accepted Jesus as Savior, right? So that's 50%, right? It's still kind of low. I would think it was higher, but again, this is from a Protestant perspective. Compared to, give you the other side of it, 26% of Gen Xers and 16% of millennials. Whoa, right? 90% of the so-called Builder Generation, if you're not familiar with that term, is those who were born prior to 1945. They believe, you know, if you treat others as you want them to treat you, you know what millennials believe? Less than half agree with that. I mean, that's just common sense, right? Do unto somebody else as you want them to do unto you. Less than half of the millennials agree with that. You know, I don't get it. Additionally, 43% of millennials stated that they either, and this is the big one for me, Let me just give you this number. You're talking 43%, 2 out of 5, almost 1 out of 2, something like that. No, yeah, it's around 2 out of 5, right? It's 40%. 43% of millennials stated they either don't know, they don't care, or they just don't believe that God exists. They don't care. They don't believe that God exists. 44% say, 44% of them believe that Satan is real and influential. So one more stat here, because I don't want to drown you in these things. I want to talk to Dr. Bob Rice, who's going to be joining me. The study also found this. I'm trying to give you the big picture of what's going on right now with this generation, right? Very different mindset when it comes to God, to faith, to belief. The study found overall that younger Americans are significantly more likely than the two previous generations, and this is a diabolic deception. I'm telling you, check this out. They're more likely to embrace horoscopes as a guide, right? They believe that the stars will somehow be a better guide than God will be, right? It's so bizarre. God created those stars. They want to embrace horoscopes as a guide and karma as a life principle. You know, to see getting even with others is defensible. That's the other thing they do. And to accept evolution over creation. They also view owning property as fostering economic injustice. So if you own property, that is fostering economic injustice. On spiritual matters, Americans younger than 55, the study says, are far more likely to distrust the Bible and to believe God is involved in people's lives. So that's not good news. And I'm not here to bring you down. I want to talk about why we're seeing this and what we can do to help our kids, because they're lost, right? Anyone who believes that, they're lost, and they're not going to find happiness, because you'll never be happy without God. Money's not going to fill that hole in your heart. Sex is not going to fill that hole in your heart. Drugs are not going to fill that hole in your heart. Fame and prestige is not going to fill that hole in your heart. The only thing that will ever give you contentment, ever give you peace, give you tranquility and a sense of fullness is God. That's it. So it's apparently, to me, it's apparent we're losing a couple generations of our children. And again, I go back to this secularizing influence of our culture that's putting their eternal souls in jeopardy. And obviously, we need to be more like Saint Monica. We talked a lot about her in recent days, right? Pray for those children. Never stop. Pray that they return to the faith. And maybe we'll have a lot of Augustines in the future. Maybe we'll have a lot of these incredible fruits from our prayers and from our tears. But we need to be doing other things for them as well. That's why I've invited Dr. Bob Rice, who's a professor of catechetics and the director of the online Masters of Arts in Catechesis and Evangelization at Franciscan University of Steubenville. And it's great to have him here with us. He knows this, I think, better than anyone. And, Doctor, I am grateful for your time. It's good to have you here. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Drew, it's great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Boy, those numbers are, to me, just, they're surprising, but they're not. I mean, we've been seeing this trend. But the lack of belief in God, the willing to accept such a great deception like horoscopes and karma and things along those lines, to me, I don't get it. Why you want to trade, one belief for something that's just, it's so unsupportive. Before we get to these things, let's first talk about why it's happening. What are you seeing? How's the culture, how is it the culture has this much influence over young people?
Well, it's worth recognizing, again, you're kind of stating the obvious, but we are absolutely living in a post-Christian culture. Yep. I think people from older generations were used to having some kind of semblance of religion and faith, one nation under God, et cetera, et cetera. That's just not the case anymore. You've been seeing that in media for decades, and it's just been slowly ebbing its way into the American consciousness. And young people, of course, are at the forefront of culture. I mean, they are, those millennials are really, truly the first generation of a post-Christian culture where, the issues are theological, but Drew, I'd also say the issues are philosophical. Huh. Like they feel they don't think. They're not taught to think. Everything is relative. There's no absolute truth. And once you get into that, it's a slippery slope.
You're not kidding. I think we're witnessing that vividly today. Bishop Robert Barron, he said that one of the biggest reasons that young people fall away from the faith is because of the so-called conflict between science and faith. And I see these signs on people's yards, you know, they have science. You ever see those signs? They have like five different words or six different words that are, you know, love is love, you know, science is science.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. And that's a hard thing for a lot of people to get beyond. I mean, they're apparently convinced that faith is irrational and that science is really the only rational thing. What do you see, and is that sense of belief in science on the rise, and the belief in faith, you know, on the demise?
Yeah, I would say on an intellectual level, particularly with a lot of, I would say, public schools, but sadly even some Catholic schools, the idea of, you know, evolution is the truth, and the Bible is just silly nonsense. And I think in some ways we've done young people a disservice of really trying to dive more deeply into, you know, what is Scripture saying and what is occurring there. But I also think, Drew, it's a matter of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the issues of these young people, they might come up with a lot of reasons why they don't believe.
Right.
But what's common in all of them is usually a lack of a faith community, you know, that's like walking with them and accompanying them. Sadly, we as a society have kind of gotten used to jettisoning teenagers into school systems.
Yeah.
And we don't have a lot of intergenerational contact in a positive way with young people. That was something, you know, 2 years ago, Pope Francis called a synod on young people. And one of the overwhelming things they heard from young people was just they feel isolated, they feel disconnected. And, you know, it's not so much that they need more of the truth, which they absolutely do, but they need the truth in love. And they need more of a demonstration of Christian discipleship than an explanation. And when they get that, the explanation makes more sense.
Yeah, that's so well said. They do. They need the truth in love. Are we failing to do that? I mean, where's this being short-circuited? As I said, as a parent, I did everything I thought was right, you know, to raise my kids. A lot of parents are saying, hey, I've done everything I possibly can. Is it a failure of catechesis in the educational systems? Are Catholics institutions failing? Are parents failing? I mean, where are we losing these kids?
Yeah, it could be a little of everything, Drew. You know, but I would also say this, and this might be just a voice of hope. You know, you, as I heard you say, you have come to the conviction, as have I, that drugs won't satisfy you, sex won't satisfy you, success won't satisfy you. Right? Those are all very mature things to say. We're dealing with immature people who haven't yet really lived life. They're still buying the lie.
You're right.
So I have great hope that as this generation gets older, some of those numbers might shift back when they go, wow, you know what? The media was just selling me a bunch of bull. Like, I'm not happy. I got everything I tried, and I'm really still miserable. And yeah, just pray for a lot more Augustines that are there.
The good news
of families, Drew, is that a young person is more likely to reflect the religious life of their family than not. But even in that context, I think you can do everything right. And, you know, it's not just the devil, it's the flesh, right?
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
It is. You know, Adam and Eve, I thought, were treated pretty darn well in the garden. And they still made a really bad decision. But there's always opportunities for conversion.
Yeah, it's such a great point. It really is. And, you know, to your point, for any parent out there that's concerned about their child right now, you know, so often what we see happen, Professor, is the fact that, you know, when those kids finally get married and they finally have children, although that's happening at a much later stage in life now than it has ever happened before, you know, you see them send their kids to Catholic school, or you see them want their kids to receive the sacraments, or you see the family starting to return to church. And I've seen that with a lot of people. I saw people who, before the kids, never went to Mass, never did anything. Once they started having their children, suddenly their kids are back in school and the parents are back in church. And that's a good thing. There's a lot of hope. Chesterton, he once said, I was thinking about this whole this whole desire of these millennials to go ahead and to embrace horoscopes and the occult and just to reject God altogether. And I'm sure you're familiar with the famous quote of Chesterton where he says, when men stop believing in God, they don't believe in nothing, they believe in anything. Is that why we're seeing, you know, a rise in this type of belief and the New Age movement and some of this other wackiness?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, the challenge of Christianity is we have to change. You know, we look at the image of Jesus Christ. I mean, he's saying tough things. You know, love your enemies, right? Pray for those who persecute you. If you want to save your life, you'll lose it. Take up your cross and follow me. That doesn't really speak well to a consumeristically driven instant gratification culture that young people find themselves in. People are looking for religion that suits their desires and would conform to them. That's the nice thing about these new age stuff is you can make it anything. Really, you just kind of spiritualize your own philosophy and boom, you've got a really comfortable religion where anything you do is right. Christianity is challenging. You know, Christianity is difficult, but Christianity is true. And so I think that Chesterton quote is a perfect example. We always want to make God in our image, and it's hard for us to humble ourselves to be in the image and likeness of God.
That's so true. You know, a lot of kids, too, as you pointed out, this is something I didn't think of until you said it, and I think it's such a strong point. You know, I look at these things from, you know, from life, from years of experience, and as being a mature adult. At least I think I'm mature. That can be debated. don't bring that up with my wife. But you know, kids, if you take a look at, you know, our kids are driven by emotions and not by reason. Yeah. I think that's such a great point. So let me ask you a question on that point. Instead of using reason, and I often say to people, look, don't use the catechism, don't use, you know, theological arguments to try to win people over. You know, you convert people by your actions, by your life, by love, by, as you pointed out, speaking that truth in love. If our kids are driven by emotion and not by reason, how do we use that state, those emotions, to bring them back to God?
Well, and I think this ties in, you know, you mentioned Bishop Barron earlier. He often talks about the evangelizing power of beauty.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because beauty evokes the right type of emotion. It's not an emotional, you know, it's not like an emotional manipulation, so to speak, which is what the culture is really great about. But real true beauty moves the heart. And you can see true beauty in beautiful liturgy, in music, in art. But the most beautiful thing is the life of a joyful disciple of Jesus Christ. You know, and being able to see that and experience that. Drew, it was so beautiful that you talked about praying a rosary with your family. I'd say there are many Catholics, and I think we struggle with this, particularly in the U.S., because in the United States, Catholicism didn't come through evangelization. It came through immigration.
Right. That's true.
We brought our faith with our family, but then we came head-to-head with this culture which really just devours faith, you know, and it's not just Catholicism. Yeah. I mean, American consumeristic culture just really does a number on family, on faith, on all of those things. And so many families just were used to having faith, but maybe just didn't know how to articulate it as well, or didn't really talk about it. And we've never, I think, just generally speaking as American Catholics, feel very comfortable talking about it. That's why shows like this are great, or Bishop Barron or others. It's just so nice to hear somebody talking about the faith, because even older generations, we're just not used to that so much. And it's something we need to get better at, not in a way of talking down or just correcting, but even just saying, you know, this is what I love about being Catholic. You know, this is what I love about the sacrament of reconciliation. You know, are we able just to share that more and have that not such a taboo conversation? I think that is one of the blocks, not just to youth evangelization, but just to the growth in the church in general.
Yeah, I love that. And my producer, Maggie, and I were talking about this a little bit before. Maggie, you had a kind of a theory or an example that, why don't you share that with Dr. Rice?
Well, yeah, the Disney movie Pinocchio, actually, I think is kind of an interesting analogy for this journey. You know, you have Geppetto, who's this kindly fatherly figure who wishes for a son. He gets Pinocchio. Pinocchio, as this, you know, sweet, naive, trusting individual, he falls into the clutches of who is ironically called Honest John, who leads him to Pleasure Island.
Yep.
And then Pinocchio is seduced. All of his peers are doing all of these things that are wicked, and they kind of all are leading towards destruction. But Pinocchio ends up getting away, and he has to kind of go to the depths of himself in order to understand that, like, his kindly father, while not perfect, was trying to do the best things for him. You know, and it's kind of that journey of faith and fatherhood.
That's awesome. Maggie, that's excellent. That's such a great insight. I would agree. Professor, I only have a few moments left. I'll let you respond to Maggie and any thoughts that you have for parents or others who really are worried right now about the decline in faith, especially among those they love.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing I would say is have hope. You know, I mean, I think that Pinocchio analogy is great awesome. Because it is part of the journey of youth to ask questions. And sometimes we can get afraid of questions, maybe too afraid. Maybe we get so upset when young people ask questions that we shut down the conversation. Well, they're going to take that conversation somewhere else. We really want to make sure, as best we can, that we're in a loving, accompanying, witnessing relationship to young people, and that we're patient. I mean, God is so patient with us. You know, don't, you know, those of you listening, don't lose hope on this generation. God can do great things there. They're testing, they're trying, they're pushing. That's part of what being young is. They're trying to own their own faith. But I would also say that we as a church can do better, as opposed to just kind of, you know, when they're younger, we dictate the truth because we know the truth, right? You know, this is what is true, and we go through it. You mentioned, like, you know, catechism, other stuff. We have an abundance of truth, but it's that truth in love. It's the witness. When young people start to realize that we want something for them, not from them,
yep.
and that what we're offering them is for the fullness of life that only Jesus can offer, I think it starts to change the conversation. And then I think at some moment, just like Augustine woke up one day, like all those things that we've done, and again, this is just a hope to a lot of listeners out there, those things that we've done in faith and in love will be remembered at one moment. It might be a low moment for that young person, but it becomes a time when they say, I experienced something real there. I know that that was real. And the Lord is going to use that in a powerful way if we just, you know, stay faithful.
Well, I just love that. And I think that line you just shared, kids need to know that we want something for them, not from them, is yeah. just so telling. And I think you're right. I think back on my own father, too, and the lessons that he taught me, things I never understood, maybe even respected or had valued until I became a parent and a father. I thought, wow, look at the sacrifice. Look at the love. Look at the example. And when we plant those yeah. seeds of faith, you know, in the souls and the hearts of our children, our prayers water them. God's going to do the rest. Hey, doctor, it's been great having you here. I'm really grateful for your insights and for your time. I hope people will follow you. What's the best way to track you down and get plugged into you?
Yeah, I have a website. It's bob-rice.com. Bob-rice.com. Somebody took bobrice.com.
Did they really?
So I have to put the dash in there. Yeah, they don't even use it. It's kind of dumb. Anyway, but you can check out that website. I've got some podcasts, other things going on, and you can find out more about what I do.
Well, let's talk again. I appreciate your great work. You keep it up, okay? Thank you for being
Anytime,
here.
Anytime, Drew. Thank all you. Right. God bless you and all you listeners.
God bless you. That's Dr. Bob Rice. Check him out online. When I return, you know, there's a teacher that I want to talk with when I come back. You know, high school students are spending a lot of time connected to their digital devices. Jeremy Adams says this is leading to a hollowing out of the current generation. We'll talk about it.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show is here for you at 888-914-9149.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I am here for you. Thanks for being here for me as well. It's great to hang out every afternoon and take a look at life, take a look at so much that's unfolding in our culture and in our own families. We just talked a little bit about millennials and their difficulties in keeping faith in God. If you missed that conversation or any of the conversations we had today, we had some really great ones, about an hour after the show's over, and that's not too far from now, go to my podcast, go to relevantradio.com, and just do a search for the Drew Mariani Show. You're going to find all the shows, not just from today, but you'll find great conversations we have had on everything from the New Age movement to what's happening in Afghanistan to your health. I mean, it's always a mixed bag. So check out the podcast. Tell others about it. Share them. It's a great way to become informed and also to educate others, so, or turn others on the relevant. As I was saying, we just talked about a problem that, you know, my own heart, I pray for parents. I pray for my children. You know, the millennial generation is having incredible difficulty keeping this relationship with God. I mean, they need him. But then there's Gen Z, all right? I know there's a lot of these different gens, right? And it can get very confusing. Gen Z people, and I'll help you understand the decade. They were born in the late 1990s, all right, starting in the late 1990s. And they go through, I guess, to just a few years ago. These are the kids who grew up with tech, right, as just a normal part of life. When I grew up, right, I had a rotary phone. Can you believe that? I sound so dated, right? It's crazy. You know, I had to have an encyclopedia, you know, when I was in school. You know, then this fancy new thing came along called, you know, the internet, the interweb. And I remember I shared the story many times as a journalist. I was a journalism major. I thought I'd be anchoring TV news. I went to college. My roommates were electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, civil engineers, comp sci guys. I mean, these guys were all math heads, right? Well, my one roommate got a computer, and I was banging out reports and news stories and stuff on typewriters. And when a computer came, it was probably slow as could be. You know, can you imagine those first-generation computers? I thought it was the greatest thing in the world to be able to write a news report on this thing. My kids don't know what it's like not to have had a wireless phone, right, a cell phone, to have a computer, you know, to have all the amenities that we have today. Those are kids who grew up. This is a normal part of life. Today, people are giving their kids iPads in their cribs. You know, I don't necessarily agree with that, but, you know, the internet only really got started, if you think about it, in the 1990s, right? And then the first iPhone wasn't made, believe it or not, until 2007 when that came out. 2007, wasn't that long ago, if you think about it. So up until that time, people depended on, Maggie pointed out to me, you know, she was saying encyclopedias, you needed books, you needed magazines, you needed newspapers for information. You had television for entertainment. There's no DVR, right? You wanted to watch Johnny Carson or some show, you know, football. Or there's no delay in it. You want to see what the weather is? You don't look at the radar on your phone. You had to hope that the weather guy was accurate about tomorrow's forecast, right? You couldn't see whether the storm was on course or not, right? Life has changed for this generation. Kind of cool, and I like it. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like 20 years from now, let alone 50 years from now. But what we're finding out, and I do want to talk about this because it's not all roses, right? The world of tech may not be the best environment to raise our kids in. As big a blessing as I think it is, and it's made my life just so wonderful, doing a national talk radio show. You know how many newspapers and magazines I'd have to pour through all the time? You know how much ink? You know, the access to information that you and I have now, the ability to communicate with my producers, the things I can do digitally, it's just phenomenal. It's phenomenal. So with smartphones and the internet, we've seen the rise of social media, and that has meant that there's been a real disconnect between children and their siblings. You ever see somebody riding in a car, the kids are in the back seat? I was driving one time when my kids were growing up, and you know, they all had these, I gave them cell phones at one point. So quiet. And I look back. Why? Because they're all on their phones, and they're talking to one another. But they're not talking out loud. They're texting each other, right? I'm thinking, what? Like, I'm sure you probably experienced that as well. You know, we have the rise of social media. And I think we're seeing, even though we're more connected, there's a greater disconnect. The parents, extended families, friends. We're more connected, but I also think we're more isolated. That's my personal input. The other thing is just even the blue flickering, you know, those screens, they have an effect on sleep. They also, I think, have an effect on anxiety, as one guest on my show had said. And, yeah, there's entertainment there. The kids will be quiet in the backseat on a long, long trip, but I don't know. We used to play license plate games, and I used to torture my sisters, you know, those long trips. My parents probably wish they had an iPad, you know. Anyway, Jeremy Adams is a teacher, and he teaches in Southern California. At the very beginning of the school year, he did something I found really revealing. He showed his students, he shows the kids, at the very beginning of the class, right, he shows them pictures of celebrities. Miley Cyrus, right? Kendall Jackson, or Kendall Jenner, I should say, not Jackson, Kendall Jenner. And the kids all know who they are, right? They know Miley, they know Kendall. But then I'll show them a picture of, let's say, Mike Pence or Nancy Pelosi. They have zero, no clue, nada, nunca, none. They have no idea who those people are, despite the fact that they're influencing the lives of the country every single day. But it's worse than that. Teenage depression. If you take a look at some of the numbers out there, and you might see this with your own kids. I really think our cell phones and this digital technology, this is my personal opinion, and I've had a physician on who talked about this in the past, a psychiatrist. She was a psychiatrist too as well. I really think anxiety is directly connected to this, this type of exposure. But that's a whole other conversation. Teen depression up has risen 63% since 2007. Suicide, not even like to talk about it. It's become the second leading cause of death for teenagers in the country. And that is skyrocketing as well. So there's something going on here. Let's put our finger on the pulse of it. I've invited Jeremy to join me today. He's just written a book entitled Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. And this is, you know, that's such a great title because they are the future, right? The future physicians, scientists, doctors, educators, legislators. You go down the list of it. Again, you want the book? It's Jeremy Adams. Do a search for his name. Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. It's printed by Regnery Press. You can find that at regnery.com if you want to check it out. Hey, Jeremy, thanks for your patience. Thanks for your work, too. I'm really looking forward to talking to him. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Drew. It's a pleasure to be talking to you, and a lot of important issues you're talking about there, for sure.
So fill me in. Tell me what's going on, would you? What are you doing?
You know,
what are you doing in class, and what are you seeing?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, you know, I think a lot of people want to dismiss this crisis, and it is a crisis. It's nothing that's not hyperbole. I'm not being dramatic. It is an absolute generational crisis. And I think the most disturbing thing that I've noticed in the last month or so, the book's been out for almost a month, is just how much denial there is out there.
Wow.
How much people our age want to just dismiss it and say, you know what, this is just a get off my lawn book. Every generation, right? Every generation is cranky. Every generation has curmudgeons. Every generation has a crank. Now, first of all, I just want everybody to know, I am way too young to be a curmudgeon. I think you have to be in your 60s, right?
Amen.
I'm 45.
I'm with you.
45. But you ask, you know, Drew, you ask what's going on. And what's going on is I've been teaching for 24 years. And so I have noticed in the last 5 to 10 years that there are very disturbing changes, kinds of pivots in the way that our students look at their lives, the way they spend their time, their morality, the way they look at religion, the way they look at America, the way they look at friendship and love and entertainment. And this is not, like I said, this is not a get off my lawn book. And by the way, at the end of the day, this book is not critical of the children. The kids can't control the world they're being born into. It's critical of you and me.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now that we teachers, you know, we don't get famous. We don't get rich. We don't get a lot of accolades, but there is one thing we have going for us, and that is sometimes, we see things develop a little bit earlier than everybody else.
That's
so
true.
This book, Hollowed Out, represents, you know, I feel like I'm speaking for thousands of American teachers who we want to wave our hands, Drew,
yeah,
and we want to say, Americans, listen up. The things that make life worth living, the beautiful things that fill our souls, they are simply not there in the lives of our young people, and we need to understand what's going on, and we need to do it quickly.
That's well said, Jeremy. I love it. Jeremy Adams is my guest. If you want to join us, maybe you're a teacher, maybe you got a perspective, I'll go to the phones in a second. You can get in at 888-914-9149. And to your point where you say, look, it's not the kids' fault, and it really isn't the kids' fault. I mean, you put the blame for this dissolution really on the American family. So if tech is dividing these kids from their families, maybe expand on that a little bit. How's the dissolution of the family driving this?
Great question. And what I hope your listeners understand is that the tech is really a symptom of a broader disease. And the disease is that our young people today are growing up completely untethered to the foundational, substantive, influential adult relationships that existed in the past. I do not have enough words to describe the extent to which young people are growing up without adult values,
wow,
adult expectations, adult role models. I mean, think about, and Drew, I don't know how old you are. I don't know you very. Can I just ask, how old are you?
Sure, I am 56.
Okay, So when you think about our childhood, I'm 45, you think of all the things, you know, going to the movies, you know, reading books, going to football games, dating, gossiping, flirting, you know, spending time with your parents and having them show you, look, life isn't all roses and you're not perfect. You need to do things to become a better kind of human being, to have standards set in a loving but firm way. You need to understand these things literally do not exist for a great many of our young people. And you put your finger on it. The thing that is so unique about this generation is just how uniquely miserable they are. We have filled in all of these gaps, all these adult values, these adult relationships, these experiences that are, that nourish the soul. We've filled them up with all the tech. And our children spend 9 to 10 hours a day on their devices. And that statistic is an old statistic. It was before the pandemic. And what's filling it? Well, what do they see on social media? It is violent. It is vulgar. It is not celebratory of traditional values. It's dismissive of America and Christianity, largely. There's a part in the book where I get this amazing quote from a principal or a dean down in Arkansas, and he confiscates phones all day. And he has this powerful and he has this powerful quote because he looks at what kids are looking at, and he said, "If you knew, if you knew what your 14 and 15 year old sons and daughters were looking at, the vulgarity, the violence, the pornography, it would take your breath away."
Wow, that's frightening. That really is frightening. It's a wake up call. I had a friend who was really hesitant about giving her son a cell phone just because she wanted him to have it, so she went to pick him up after school and stuff along those lines. But there was a kid in school who, to your point, on the playground, you know, had porn on his phone, and you know, exposes these kids. And the level of exposure to pornography for kids is dropping precipitously, you know, let alone all the other pressures that the kids are being put on as well. Let's grab a call or two for you here if we can. My guest, Jeremy Adams, if you want to sound off, join the conversation, share your own perspective. It's 888-914-9149. He wrote a book, by the way. I think it's well worth the read. It's only been out about a month. It's called Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. And you can get it at regnery.com, and I'm sure probably online. Claudia is listening in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Hi, Claudia. You're on the air with Jeremy Adams. Welcome.
Well, this sounds a lot funnier than what you were just talking about. It's about tech and how it does influence a social scene. I was looking at, okay, what's in Nougat today about the weekend? And there was one thing that was really lovely. How about coffee and a dance in the morning for 2 hours tomorrow morning on Friday? But on Saturday night, if you have $20 and a pair of earphones, bring them. It's the silent dance. No one is, there is no music. It's only in your earphones, and you tune in your own music and dance and see if, I guess, can you find someone who looks like they might be listening to something similar without any sound?
So, I mean, you're not kidding around. I mean, this is real, Claudia? I mean, really, they have dances where you put headsets on and nobody talks to each other and you pay for that?
Well, this is...
Open your mic, Maggie.
It was 20, that's what they're saying, $20. And the gentleman who took my call told me that he's heard that in other places.
So, Patrick,
you've
heard
it. First time I've heard it.
Maggie, what have you heard?
Yeah, I actually went to a Christmas party that they called it a silent disco. Yeah, and people loved it.
How exciting. You just sit around and stare at each other and listen. Wow. Unbelievable. Hey, Claudia.
Dance. No, you're dancing.
Oh, it's a dance?
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, wow. Crazy. Jeremy, did you hear about that? Have you heard about silent dances?
You know, I haven't, but I'll tell you right now, it doesn't surprise me. You know, when she was saying that, it reminded me of the fact that, you know, I keep talking about how, like, things have changed in the last five to 6 years. It used to be that, like, if I had a few minutes at the end of class and I told the kids, okay, you know, pack up, it would get really loud. The kids would, like, walk around. They would gossip. They'd flirt. They'd talk. When I do that now, Drew, it is absolutely, the kids will put their stuff away and they're silent.
That's
absolute silence. Because they take out their phones, and you know what they're doing? They're self-medicating. Yeah. They just scroll. No, and by the way, they also don't look at each other in the eyes when they talk. Nobody looks each other in the eyes anymore.
That's so true. That is such a great observation. You know, I didn't think of it at the level. I mean, you're a teacher. You deal with students. So, you know, I noticed it. I used to do a lot of traveling before I got into talk radio. I was doing documentary work, so it took me around the world and around the country, and I was doing a lot of, you know, airline travel. And people, I would talk to everybody. I'd be in line and talk to the guy in front of me, behind me, wherever, on the airplane. With cell phones now, you go to an airport, everybody sits in their seat or they are in line. Nobody talks to one another. Everybody scrolls through their phones. And this next generation, as they now enter the workplace, you know, we're going to see so much more of this. There's a lack of dialogue and exchange. It's psychologically.
Absolutely. And I would say that the pandemic has amplified and accelerated this. I mean, it's funny because sometimes people think I wrote the book about the pandemic.
Wow.
It's not. You know, these problems existed far before that, but now they're far worse. Like, I've noticed, my high school in Bakersfield, California, is a big football school.
Yeah.
And it used to be that if you wanted a seat, you had to show up hours early on a Friday night. It's empty. Nobody goes. And I ask the kids, why don't you want to go? And they're like, well, it's just kind of awkward. You know, you got to talk to people and interact, and, you know, you don't know who you're going to come across. And so they'd rather stay home where it's comfortable.
Well, let me do this. Let me grab a few calls for you. Mike in Annapolis, Maryland, you're on deck. David in Mesa, Arizona, everyone else, we'll get your calls. My guest today is Jeremy Adams, came out with a new book talking about something I think that is unbelievably on point and really important. We're taking a look how tech has influenced this next generation, and we're seeing the byproducts of it. If you want to sound off, give us your perspective, share your stories, and get in on the conversation, here's the way you do it. 888-914-9149. We'll be back with more right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
It's the Drew Mariani Show.
Keep it here on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, so good to be with you. Thanks for hanging out. We only have about 10 minutes. If you're on hold, I'm going to do my best to get you on the air. If you're just joining the conversation, an important one, I'm speaking to a teacher. Jeremy Adams is his name. He hails from Southern California. At the beginning of every school year, I was sharing that he shows students pictures of celebrities. They all know who they are, right? Miley Cyrus, Kendall Jenner, whoever else he puts up. But when he puts up some you know, world leaders, they have no clue. They're totally disconnected. They know the people who are on social media. And we are seeing the fruits of this. I mean, I really believe we're seeing suicide rates, teen depression, anxiety levels at record levels. And I think a lot of it has to do with social media and this type of technology. Depression's risen 63% since 07. Suicide rates are up. He wrote a book to address this, to plug you in, to make people aware of what is actually happening. It's entitled Hollowed Out, A Warning About America's Next Generation. Check it out at Regnery Press. Go online to their website. Jeremy, let's talk about the book very quickly. I'm going to grab a call or two for you. Tell me a little bit about it. What will people find in it, and what's the best way to connect to it?
If you read Hollow Out, it really is, you know, I think the subtitle is correct. It's a warning. And I think that it really is, before you can address a solution, before you can really understand how to tackle a problem, you really have to know what that issue is and what it looks like. And, you know, like I said before, you know, we teachers, we're in the ground floor. We interact. I'm one of these teachers. I like to get to know my students. That's what makes it a magical place. You know, I am a unapologetic, bleeding heart, classroom romantic. I believe that the one certain door to the American dream is a high quality education. But at the end of the day, so much of your educational success happens before you get to a classroom. Do you value what we do? Do you value education? Can you pay attention? Do you want to go to school? Do you want to learn? Do you want to grow? And so many of these habits and these dispositions that you need to succeed in school and in life are simply not being taught and inculcated into this generation of young people. And it really worries me because, you know, just to be kind of romantic about the whole thing, you know, think about all the joy that you have as a child. Think about the hope for love, the hope for faith, the hope to contribute to your country, the hope to find meaningful friendships. I mean, if you buy the book, you will understand why they are hollowed out, why there's a lack of joy and enchantment and grandeur in their worldview. I call it American fatalism. So many young people feel like they're not in control of their lives, that these huge forces are controlling their destinies and that the future is bleak. Well, you know, that's because they don't have a lot of adults and values that inspire and enchant them to do what they want to with their lives. And it really is an American tragedy.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay, let's grab a call or two. We have a few minutes. We'll go to Mike in Annapolis, Maryland. Mike, thanks for joining us. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Drew. Haven't talked to you in a while. Hope you're well.
I am.
I appreciate the discussion today. I agree with it. I see this in my own kids. I think the one who uses the phone the less has probably got the best social skills. But let's stir the pot here a little bit. And you said you had a rotary phone growing up. Not only did we have a rotary phone, we had a ridiculous party line where we had to share a phone line with a couple other families. And when we moved to our own quote unquote private line, you know, I couldn't get my brother and sister on the phone all the time. And we had a TV that had, you know, rabbit ears that were wrapped in tinfoil.
Yeah, right.
And I can still hear my parents screaming, get off the phone and turn off the TV. I mean, I think this trend has been going on for, you know, 50 years. I just think that on some level, there are some benefits to this technology. I remember a couple times I got home late and I almost gave my father a heart attack because he had no idea how to reach me. But I don't know. I just want to.
Yeah, no,
there
Mike,
are
Mike, that's
some
a good point.
Limited benefits, I think, to this.
And I said the same thing. It has made my life better. There's no question about it. I mean, technology is a good thing. It's inherently neutral. If it's used for good purposes, goods are multiplied. If it's used for illicit purposes, then evil is multiplied. So I think you bring up a great point. But I think things have reached a new level. And Jeremy, I'll bring you into the conversation on this. I mean, the rabbit ears and the party line or the push-button phone or the rotary phone, that's one thing, very limited. Now there's 24/7 access. Kids are falling asleep in bed with their headphones on or the TV on or their smartphone going back and forth with their friends in a chat.
Yeah, what I'd say to Mike, first of all, Mike is right. I mean, there are definitely some benefits. I mean, my teenager, I have an app on there where I can kind of track where they are, right? If they're somewhere they're not supposed to be, I know it. Yeah. So there are definitely benefits. I'm not an anti-technology guy.
Yeah,
here. I mean, I love my phone. But I will say that there is a difference between TV and radio when people like you and Mike and I were growing up. These young people, I didn't interact with my television, right? My television didn't give me my value system. My television didn't, it couldn't like what I posted. It wasn't an algorithm feeding me the same content over and over, reinforcing a lot of negativity. I didn't get my self-esteem from listening to the radio or TV. It's hard for me explain the extent to which young people today have an ecosystem. Like they're the first people in the history of our species who have a room, a place where they spend the majority of their time. And you and I, and I bet you Mike too, we don't know how to go into that room. We don't know how to interact with it. Hmm. We can't supervise them. So imagine growing up and there's a room in your house where no adults are allowed to go
kids
can say and do anything they want. That's completely unlike a TV or a radio, and the things that go on in there are not good for their value system and for their mental health.
Oh, great point. Hey, Mike, thanks. I don't know if you're still there, but...
Hey, thank you. I agree with that point completely. Thank you.
Yeah, good to hear from you. I recognize your name and your city. It's good to have you on. Chelsea is listening in Phoenix. Chelsea, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to add a different perspective to the conversation. I'm a preschool teacher, and I've been working in preschool for almost 10 years now, and progressively every year we have seen a drastic increase in the kids who are unable to do simple things like hold a pencil or turn on a water faucet. I had a little girl who could not turn on a water faucet by herself because she was on devices all the time. We're seeing more and more occupational therapy referrals for kids who are behind on their motor skills because they're spending so much time doing their iPad or flicking up and down on their iPad. I mean, that's the motion that their little hands have because that's what their time is devoted to when they're not with us. And it's really becoming an increasing problem.
Wow, that's amazing. Sam, Chelsea, thank you for sharing that. And as a fellow teacher, Jeremy, you deal with a totally different age group, but that's really quite telling. I never heard that before.
No, that is fascinating. But again, not surprising at all. I mean, to kind of give a teenage version of this, that I know a lot of teachers out there listening will kind of shake their heads. You know, Chelsea's shocked that these kids can't do simple things, which, I mean, that was a powerful comment she made there.
Doubt.
But you know what shocks me is how many young people have no interest in driving. Like, they don't want to get a license.
I couldn't wait to drive.
Because for you and me, it meant freedom.
Yeah.
And when they do drive, and I'm Neither of my daughters are listening to this, so I can talk about them. They'll never know.
I love it.
But you know what? When they got their license, they didn't know how to get anywhere. They literally, without a navigation on their phone, they couldn't make it to school. And that's because, you know, Chelsea said they're always on their devices, so they can't use their hands. Our young people, they don't know how to get around our town. They literally are so dependent on their devices, they can't go almost anywhere in their city because they're always looking down. They spent 16 years looking at screens, so they have no idea how to get anywhere in their own vicinity. I won't even tell you the embarrassing stories of where my daughter couldn't drive herself
when
she finally got around to getting a license. Yeah.
Well, it's tragic. I have my own confession. Like, I couldn't call my producers if somebody put a gun to my head right now because they're either on speed dial or I use Siri to say, hey, call Maggie, call Tom. You know, I don't know their phone numbers. It's like, it's terrible, but that's what happens. We do become dependent on this technology. Jeremy, thank you. I got probably less than a minute to go. Your book, of course, Hollowed Out, and it's a great read if you want it. It's only been out for about a month, A Warning About America's Next Generation. That's available. Regnery, can people get it any other place as well?
Yeah, any place, please go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But please pick it up. Please read. Most of all, please share. I'm not famous. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not a politician. So this is a word-of-mouth book. So I hope people will read it. It's an easy book to read. Thank you.
Jeremy, thanks. We'll talk again soon. I really enjoyed having you here. I'm out of time for today. I want to thank you all for allowing me to give you a look at life. I'll be back again tomorrow to do that. Until then, have a great day.